As I said to you earlier on, we do get into another of our discussions here this morning. Let's welcome to our program to speak about some of the things that we've been seeing and how you deal with them, traumatologist Hanif Benjamin. Good morning to you and welcome to our show.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on this blessed Monday morning.
It is nice to have you with us here this morning. Just before we get into our interview, let me allow you to familiarize our listeners with you a bit and some of what you're involved in so they can have a greater understanding of your perspective on the discussion.
So I am Hanif E.A. Benjamin, clinical therapist, clinical traumatologist and forensic traumatologist, youth development specialist at the Center for Human Development Limited, strengthening families, building communities and developing minds. It is the only private social service psychological training and development company that is trauma-informed in Trinidad and Tobago in this region. And it is on that premise I'm here today.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. Our discussion is focused primarily on this mass shooting that we had over the weekend in Arima, and some of what transpired probably prior, during and after. The cause of mass shootings, that's something that we could probably discuss from here for another show and go into so many different reasons. The police have not been able to identify a reason. Well, and this is not necessarily one of those instances where you have an individual who was troubled or went through some traumatic incident, we don't know, and then got a gun and took it out on people. This seems to have been an incident inspired by some sort of prior criminal activity or related to crime one way or the other. The cause for the shooting is one thing. Having to deal with the effects of such a shooting moving forward is where the discussion really needs to go. Four persons died and you have five people surviving the incident and their family members. How does one begin to even cope with an incident like this?
Instance, it's not five people coping, it's hundreds, because for every one death revolving around that person is a community, for example, a school, a class, a church, a mandir or a mosque, right? And so for every one death, we have to consider the what I call the pebble on the silent pond, or the still pond, and when that pebble strikes the water on that pond, it reverberates and it goes on and on and on. And that is what is trauma, especially from a community perspective. So what we're talking about is the community impact of trauma, and also the community beginning at the nexus, which is, you know, the people who are immediately involved. And I must say condolences to all. Now, we're talking about, and everybody's asking me, would they ever be okay? Can they ever cope? And the question is, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot, because what has occurred there is deep. The children, the ages, you know, the circumstances surrounding, and the constant feeling of unsafe. Now, one of the big things we talk about in trauma is being hyper-vigilant, or jumpy in Trinidad terms. And so we are seeing where, you know, chances are that the mind is still unsafe. And if the mind is still unsafe, then the place that they revolve is going to be unsafe. And so while they are dealing with the death, the shooting in and of itself, the trauma continues to reverberate where I am now feeling unsafe. And so immediately, we're talking about creating a sense of safety for them. We're talking about beginning to do immediate specialized trauma work, right? Because the general scheme of things cannot apply here. We need to have serious trauma intervention to process what has happened.
I know that as a society, there are many of us who don't buy into this counseling or discussing things in that manner. We don't see it, some of us, we don't see it as something that we do. You're seen as, and I've actually heard people say this, that anytime you need counseling, you're weak. And you can't deal with things on your own, and you're supposed to be able to deal, especially for men, in many instances. You're talking about the community. This mass shooting that took place, it rattled not just this community, but many others. We have a murder figure, 400 and something. So we have communities, you have families across the country that have had to deal with this death and this untimely death, this very violent death in a very real way. As a society, how do you think that has impacted on how we do business, how we go about doing things?
Two things are happening simultaneously here. As a matter of fact, there are multiple things happening simultaneously in Trinidad and Tobago. In 2015 or 16, I said in an article that Trinidad is a violent society, and it continues to be more and more violent because we're a part of the global playing field, and we cannot want to import the good things about globalization and not think that the tragedy of what we're seeing will not also be imported.
Mm.
So over the last couple of years, we're seeing the brutality of the killing, we're seeing the sophistication of the killing, we're seeing the high power weapons and weaponry that is being used, and all of that becomes part of the global village of crime. And so Trinidad and Tobago, in my view, has been a very violent society for a long time. And over the last 20 years or so, we have become even more violent. And what comes with that is a sense of being numb. And some people are numb to the fact that we are a violent society because they are protected in their own world. And so they don't think that, you know, this reverberates around me, the criminal and them killing themselves. So that's one part of it. We have one part who is now becoming very, very traumatized in terms of vicarious traumatization is a real thing. Even though it didn't happen directly to me, but I'm feeling the effects of what it is. So you have people who have now curtailed their life, not going out, not going here, not doing this, not doing the other. But if you see the pattern of crime over the last 7, 8, 10 years, we realize that it's day or night. Crime is no longer the cover of darkness. It is wherever, whenever, with whomever. And so we have people who are now paralyzed to their life circumstances, meaning they don't want to venture out. And then there are those who are capitalizing on the criminogenic factors in our society. And so we have where, you know, certain professions, you know, expand because of this, and other, you know, look forward to situations like this. So we are living in a society where there are three main streams of people reacting to this criminogenic and criminality. And so when you have those factors, it kind of puts us in a quagmire where the thrust to solve crime and criminality becomes difficult. The thrust to heal becomes difficult because for some, healing is a no-no. And for some, if we heal, we lose work. And so that is the quagmire that Trinidad and Tobago faces. And as a society, we don't have a supportive structure to help people deal with the crime and criminogenic fallout. The reality is that while it is targeted in some areas, all of us feel the impact of crime one way or the other. However, the impetus to treat with it as a society is not there. We do not have the mechanisms in place to treat a society. You may treat an individual, but we don't know how to treat a society that is in mourning, that is going through the effects and the impact of this crime and criminogenic situations in the country.
Well, what's the effect going to be of leaving it untreated? Because that's basically what we're doing.
But you're seeing the effects. You're seeing the effects. Because there is no way a person is going to grow up in a community that is marred by violence and in the main not be impacted by this. We have communities where people can't go to school because of the gang warfare. We have communities where people emulate the people who are committing the crime. We have a media who broadcasts crime in a particular way, and it becomes glorified by young men. And so you have people who are now not only seeing it on TV, but seeing it in real life. And so when you look at those things, it now enters into our school. That is why I am always surprised that people are surprised of the level of violence in our school system, because our school system is a microcosm of our society. And therefore, if our society is going down in this particular direction, it continues again the pebble on the still pond. It reverberates. And so you have young men, impressionable mind, young woman, impressionable mind, under siege by the stimulus that they experience every single day. And they receive it from all angles. Mm-hmm. They receive it from social media. They receive it from mainstream media. They receive it from their friends. And so they glorify. And so when you look at this, we're seeing a society that is going to continue to deteriorate because, again, the stone on the pebble, the pebble on the pond.
Yeah, I'm sorry that our discussion started as late as it did, because we've only just scratched the surface here. And I've already sent a message saying that we need to bring you back for a much longer discussion, because this is deep-rooted. This is deep-rooted, and it carries with it a lot of significance, because there may be people listening into us who may be feeling things, maybe experiencing things, maybe trying to deal with emotions, and they don't realize that, well, listen, this is because of what's going on around me, and this is why I feel the way that I feel. There are people who are living in self-imposed curfew. They don't come out at a certain time. There are people who are living in self-made prisons. They lock up the whole house and they're just scared to leave anything open, and with good reason. So that's why I'm saying that we're going to have you back for a much longer, more in-depth discussion on
crime. Is it a call anytime?
Yes. But as we wrap up our discussion here, let's leave something in the minds of our listeners. If persons are feeling this overwhelmed and concerned and trapped and agitated and everything else, what's probably one or two things that they could do in the interim to try to start?
The first thing is to recognize how they feel, right? We always ignore how we feel. The first thing you should do is recognize how you feel. And when you do that, begin to recognize how it is impacting your daily life. Too often we don't recognize how we feel, and we see our life deteriorating and we're not sure why. It is because we are not paying attention to our physiological, mental, psychological well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And so today I want you to pause and just take in, how am I feeling right now? What is this feeling looking like? What does this feeling feels like from a physiological, mental, spiritual perspective? And once you begin to do that deep dive, you would recognize that you say, okay, I now need help. And you can determine the level of help. Whether you come to us at the Center for Human Development, whether you go to the hospital or a private entity. But the beginning, determine how you feel and honor how you feel.
Mm, I think that's great advice. That's going to have to leave it at least this time around. Definitely have a part two. Thank you so much for being with us here this morning and sharing your insight. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our traumatologist, Hanif Benjamin. And as you heard, definitely we are going to need a part two to that discussion. We only just scratched the surface. That's the end of my time with you all here this morning. Tasca's here. She's going to be with you from 9 to 12. As we always say, be safe on the nation's roads. You never can tell the life you save. Maybe just that of your own.